Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
And welcome to another Friday night's edition of Center Stage. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. First of all, I'd like to say to you all, so excited that you decided to join me tonight for what should be a good show. I'm waiting on all my panel. I don't know where everybody is tonight. But anyway, you know me. The show shall go on. But anyway, AJ's got a little problem going on with his at the house, and Christopher is in a moving van heading back to his hometown, and Miss Gwen Samuels, I'm not sure where she is tonight, but hopefully everybody will be along with me soon. But we got some great topics tonight, y'all. These are the topics that we're going to try to cover in great detail once they all get in place. But, you know, there's a lot going on in the news, and Center Stage has made the executive decision to cover more than one topic on Friday nights now because the news in the world that we live in is moving so fast that just talking about one topic per week, we were just getting so far behind on current events that we decided that we would take the 2 hours weekly now and break them up into segments where we talk about all the news that was going on in the world that caught our attention. Now, some things we're not interested in, but there's other topics that, you know, when you see them, they just catch your attention. And so we decided tonight, based on some of the things in the headlines, that we would cover the fact that McDonald's workers are basically protesting for higher wages. We thought that was an incredible story because it won't only affect McDonald's if they're successful, but it will help all the other minimum wage or slightly above minimum wage workers in this country, so that should be a really good thing. Also, we're going to talk about Detroit now being called Carjack City, which is scary, and that story just blew my mind in listening or looking at that story as it unfolded this week, because I'm just so surprised. My computer's going crazy, and so I was just so surprised. You know, Detroit has had a lot of problems lately with, you know, so much going on. I think the whole city basically seems to be falling apart in terms of the real estate market. So many vacant homes there, jobs, not a lot of jobs there, and I think it's only down to about 700,000 people currently in Detroit. So a lot's going on. And so obviously carjacking has become the new job or the new business. Gwen is on with me this evening. Good evening, Gwen. How you doing?
Good evening. My apologies, and thank you for allowing me to join all of you great people on the line tonight.
No problem. You know, Gwen, I was running myself. I was a couple of minutes late myself this evening. I had a lot going on. I was just bringing everybody up to speed about some of the stories that we're going to cover tonight. The fact that the Postal Service is actually thinking of eliminating door-to-door delivery service basically at the addresses of millions of people's homes. So that's going to be very scary. They're going to go to some type of basically like you have when you're in an apartment complex, but the mailboxes are going to be in the area centrally located to your home, and you and maybe 50 other people may be going to the central area to get your mail as opposed to them coming to your door. We're also going to talk about the botched execution of Clayton Lockett. That was crazy in Oklahoma this week. I mean, I was just, you know, I don't condone what Mr. Lockett did. However, you know, our system says that if you commit a crime, you know, you're still supposed to be treated fairly and humanely, and that execution was botched very poorly. Also, we're going to talk about federal workers. Federal workers. Oh, Uncle Sam, $3.3 billion. Billion with a B. And so I'm just amazed that we, because I, you know, Uncle Sam and me have a friendly relationship right about now, but for a long time I was getting harassed about, hey, what about the money you owe me? And so I'm just wondering, do they go after their own with the same vengeance that they come after us with? And then we're going to talk about term limits for politicians. I see Mr. A.J. Houston has joined us this evening. Good evening, A.J.
What's up? What's up, Carrie? Doing all right?
I'm good, and Gwen's on the line. Say hi to Gwen.
Hey, Gwen, what's up?
Hey, AJ, just preparing to bring you to Connecticut. Just a matter of when.
Ooh,
hey, you need to email me your information, and I'll send you. I just finished a couple of workshops at a middle school here, and I'll send you this package I'm creating so you can actually see what I do.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, great. Well, now that we got that out of the way, So listen, guys, we got so much to cover tonight, and Mr. Christopher is moving AJ and Gwen, so he's in a moving truck, and he's going to try to get in on the line at some point tonight if he's able, and if he's not, we understand, because Christopher has been really trying to wind up things at his base and get back to his hometown. So we love you, Christopher, and we hope that you have a safe trip this evening while you're traveling. Listen, yeah, I don't know where to begin. The news is just so crazy. Let's start with these McDonald's workers, because, you know, I feel for them. I really feel for them. I think, you know, it took courage to do what they're doing. I applaud them, and I hope that they're successful, okay, in getting a raise. I don't know if they're going to get what they want, but I think I applaud the fact that they are bold enough to get out there and risk their jobs trying to get change. Do y'all agree with that?
Yeah, but I think there's a second tier to it.
Okay.
What I mean by a second tier is that when President Obama was talking about raising the minimum wage, a lot of companies, you know, the Republicans and a lot of companies were saying, hey, we can't do that. We're going to put companies out of business. But some companies did it on their own. So I think they listen to the message and say, we're going to go on and fight this fight from this end since it's already out there in the media.
Wait a minute. Let's bring everybody up to speed. First of all, the McDonald's workers are this week boycotting in front of their corporate offices because this was the week in which the shareholders were supposed to vote on whether their executives were supposed to get big bonuses. Christopher has joined the show. Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
Good evening, and good evening, and thank you for joining us, Christopher. We know you're moving around, but we appreciate you and your input.
No problem.
So they're asking for $15 an hour, $15 an hour to be a McDonald's worker. So they went to the shareholders meeting right outside Chicago, and basically 100 of them got arrested, you know, trying to be heard about this protest. So is $15 an hour too much for them to be asking for?
No. Ooh. And I say no because President Nixon asked for $400,000 a year and he would resign. And everybody was in shock. So you ask for the high price, knowing that if you get whatever you get, because he got $250,000. So $15 an hour means they would probably get about 11 or 10.
And you know,
Go ahead.
Look, so I was looking at what they were saying online. They were saying the average McDonald's employee makes about $8.25 an hour, and this is before taxes. And so if we're looking at the Obama's push on $10 an hour, I agree with you, Chris. You know, they're going on the high end, right? You never sell the car for what you're actually looking for, right, with the goals of being able to negotiate in the middle. You know, I just want to make sure that, you know, those who are on the line, you know, protest, and while it's great, you know, I hate to see the majority of people of color end up behind bars. When we get in, we usually don't get out. So who's ever supporting these workers, you know, to, you know, fight for their right, you know, some of the people who are, you know, urge people on, go ahead. But when the things get hot, they tend to sit on the sidelines. So I'm hoping that, you know, what, that's over 100 workers that got arrested, that if you're going to, you know, be in this, you know, support these workers, you know, support them through these times, because they're now losing their freedoms for justice. It's not the same of like before.
Christopher, what do you think of McDonald's workers striking for higher wages?
Well, when I read and saw the article and heard, saw some of their prior to them when they were preparing to strike, and then when they actually did strike, I mean, I support the strike. And I think there's other avenues in terms of what other people can do. I think it's interesting that our government and so a lot of the politicians that are fighting, saying things that are really, I think, more of a myth than truth in terms of if they raise it to $15, that would cripple some of the companies and McDonald's in particular, when, like, you all had mentioned before, Bob, some of the CEOs and senior board members, the despicable amounts of money that they make, but then they complain about the backbone of the companies that make that money for them. And then I think it kind of speaks to the insensitivity to the cost of living increase. And it's funny that a lot of our congressmen as well have issues with that, but they don't have issues with the the bills that they write into law that guarantee that they get anywhere from 2 to 5 to 6% increased cost of living every year. But a lot of them don't seem to be fighting for the average worker.
Very nice.
Yep.
See, my problem
because the average worker is not who's voting them in. Because politicians has been in office for more than 20 years. Like he's on the docket. He's on the list, so he's automatically in. Because now you have to either vote Republican or Democrat. So it's kind of isolated where they can run shotgun over whoever for as long as we let this system stay in place.
I agree.
That's true, and I think when some of the things that do work that was in the civil rights, I think some people are willing to do, but I think the mass, until they really do the buying, they're not willing to. I think the standalone workers doing the strike is a good thing, but it's not as effective if the people who think that it's also a travesty would stop eating and buying McDonald's products. And put the hurting on them, and then because I think there's a lot of people who support the workers, but it's lip service. If you say,
Absolutely.
Okay, I need you for the next 30 days, if you went to McDonald's twice a week, don't go for the next 30 days, then that's support. That's more than lip service. I already don't eat at McDonald's. That's what I call them. But if I did, I would boycott them for the next 30 days. I would be willing to do that. But I think a lot of times getting to that, because it's convenient, it's kind of part of the American fabric, certain restaurants, and some people are not willing to do that. So unfortunately, in a larger way, that I think we could force McDonald's into providing a living wage salary for those employees. A lot of people are not willing to do it, but the people that would be, and I would be one of them, I'd be willing to get on that bandwagon and do more than just talk.
You know,
I
would.
I
would too, because they said McDonald's is the biggest restaurant operator in the world. So that's saying, and they said the protest came, you know, basically one day before the shareholders vote, because they were really protesting the fact that the chief executive, Don Thompson, earned in total compensation $9.5 million in 2013. That guy should share some of that. I'm sorry. He should share some
of that. Absolutely.
I think what we have to do is look at it like a unionized company. See, in the union, if you're striking as a union, anybody that crossed the line is considered a scab.
Yeah.
So if McDonald's have strikers, it's like all these people should just treat it as though until you treat your people right, I can't treat you right.
But, you know, that where it comes, moral courage needs to come in. I mean, these are not the, if you think about what we talked about with the Donald Sterling, right, things we could have done, right, to stop the profit, you know, by not buying tickets. Same thing with McDonald's. You know, are we so complacent that are we willing to make that sacrifice of not buying off that dollar menu? Because we're such a fast-paced, you know, society now. Everyone wants quick fixes. And McDonald's is a quick fix. And it also meets the need of, I hate to say, we call it, like you said, McDeath, but it actually meets some of our food insecurities. Sad to say, people scrounge up that dollar just to buy off the dollar meal based on their economics and where they are in our society. So, you know, we would also have to, those who are able to boycott, you know, help others who want to boycott but just can't even afford to be a part of the process. I think we need to make up some duo type of strategies that they could support, you know, by saying, okay, if you don't go to McDonald's, you know, I heard up the street, grocery store has something on sale. You know, have to be able, because McDonald's is, sad to say, is meeting the needs of, not necessarily the needs, but are meeting some of the food insecurity needs of many. I mean, that's why it targets our communities, right? The McDonald's are on every corner because of affordability. Yeah.
And I think the problem, too, y'all, you know, we really got to realize we got to do more because in reality, with everybody pretty much going to 30, 35 hours a week now, you know, if someone's making $8.25 an hour times 30 hours, that's really next to nothing. And so do they need some help right now, need our help? They really do. And so I think, I agree, there should be a boycott on McDonald's for at least the next 30 days until this Thompson guy realizes that maybe he can come off with some of what he's making and spread the love around to the rest of the employees who are out there on the front line serving up these burgers every day. That's just my opinion. But they said McDonald's spokesperson said that the company and their franchisees were monitoring the minimum wage debate and that they felt like $15 an hour is unrealistic, but know that the minimum wage will increase over time. What does that really mean? What does that say? Of course it's going to increase over time, but what, I mean, what kind of timetable are we talking about?
No, they mean not at this time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? I think some of the discussion that was said before, I think if we look back like with civil rights and Martin Luther King Jr. and a lot of the individuals, both named and unnamed, that were at the forefront of the civil rights movement, you had actors like Harry Belafonte, Dick Gregory. You had Lena Horne that gave millions of dollars to the movement. And that, and along with the monies that other individuals, whether they were wealthy or not, but people were willing to sacrifice for the greater good of all the other people that it was affecting. So if, I think what AJ was saying in terms of unionizing and having something more strategic planned to help those workers, as well as uniting, whether that's a national fund or money that people can, because a lot of this does get back to money. So then if you have workers that are willing to say, hey, I'm willing to risk losing my job, because I dare say some of these people that strike, they're going to get some pink slips because they're at-will workers. But if there was something established where people could have some kind of supplemental or subsidy that the people, the village, puts in place for them, that's also going to create a different dichotomy in McDonald's and what McDonald's will see. But the thing is that at the end of the day, with meager support, McDonald's knows that they're going to strike, people going to picket, they're going to give certain individuals pink slips, and at the end of the day, nothing will have changed, because unless you get not only the attention of those CEOs and the corporate millionaires at McDonald's, you have to also get the assistance from Congress and a lot of those lobbyists, because when you start making inroads and hurting the overall wall the index for Wall Street and their stocks, and if you hit them where it hurts, you won't have to worry about McDonald's or the congressmen running to do something about it. But basically, it's like falling on deaf ears, and there's not enough ammunition for them to really feel that they have to do anything. They'll take the heat for a little while. Media, people are picketing, protesting, but at the end of the day, it's going to be business as usual tomorrow.
But you know
what? But you know what?
Walmart did almost the same thing.
Exactly. But see, that's why we got to help them this time, because we realize retailers like Walmart and this food industry giant, they're not treating their employees well. Basically, what we found that a recent report in the New York think tank Demos found that the CEO to worker compensation ratio for the fast food industry was more than 1,000 to 1 in 2013. That ain't even right. That's not right.
But see, you know what, we can leverage. Election year is coming up. So if we're thinking about strategies, right, strategies that we can support them. So we can also put pressure on these elections coming up, because we put them in office, you know, and they get in office and they get complacent because they, you know, they're thinking they're there for life because we don't have no terms. And so I think we need to put some pressure on those running for office saying, this is what we need in our community. You want something from me. You kiss my baby on the forehead in October because you want my vote in November. But this is what I need from you today, you know. And then we need to be able to lay out some things and see who's willing, like, to step up to the plate. So I agree with Chris when he talked about you know, creating that village that will support those who do boycott. Because I do believe people target McDonald's just because of affordability and if for some of the, you know, for a fast food place. And so if we can offer some alternatives, you know, if there's some people that are willing to step up to the plate, my McDonald's is literally two blocks from me. I don't have a problem organizing the boycott. And I will work with my Stop and Shops around the corner and everyone else to help support those, you know, they're saying, look, you don't shop here. Here are some alternatives. How can we help meet some needs so you don't think you have to go to McDonald's? You know, so I agree with you, Chris. I mean, we need to be strategic on this.
What I think, too, though, is this should not just be looked at as a McDonald's issue. This is a issue for billions of people. I mean, making low wages and the CEOs are pocketing millions and, you know, all kind of buku's of money, and they're not treating their workers right. So this issue is bigger than McDonald's, and I think we should do something, all of us, whether that's just boycott by not giving our money to McDonald's in terms of buying their product, or if it's doing something else to help the workers, but all of us should do something because in one way or another, it's going to affect us or someone we know. Bottom line on that. Okay, y'all, we got to move on because we got so many stories to get to. Let's talk about Detroit. AJ has a connection to Detroit, and Chris is not too far from Detroit. But they're calling Detroit the carjack city, the carjack city. And they're saying basically that this is just like the end of May 2014, there has already been 191 carjackings in 2014. And I was like, wow. It's like, that's crazy. So basically, there's certain parts of the city that they're calling the carjack, you know, that's giving them that name, the carjack city. And basically, the police are saying, which is crazy, they're blaming people for getting nice cars. Basically, they're saying that because you have these nice cars that are hard to steal once they're parked, that because they have those anti-theft equipment on it and security devices and GPS systems on it, that the only way these guys are able to get your car is if you steal in it. So that's why, thus, the carjacking. Like, that's just crazy. I mean, AJ, you've been up there many times. I don't know if Chris has been through Detroit or Gwen's been through Detroit, but AJ used to go through there, like, what, two or three times a year?
Yeah, still do. But see, the thing is, Reverend Ryan's brothers was carjacked and robbed in Detroit.
No.
About a year and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
And they was acting like they didn't know who he was. They got caught, but it was like, oh, we know. But see, I think the thing is we've let so many cities just go so far because Detroit and some of the other lining areas were taken over by the government 3 years ago.
Mm.
And the people that took over the city didn't allow any of the elected city workers to have any say-so, and everything still went downhill. So it's not like it's just on the people. I'm saying it's on the whole system, whole echelon of Detroit, because when you drive to Detroit now, I'm saying there are blocks of buildings boarded up.
Oh, it's
wow.
So much going on there. They said that basically the police reported 720 carjackings last year. And this is a city that has fewer than 700,000 residents. That's crazy. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
A good percentage of them riding in new cars.
Say what?
A good percentage of them riding in new cars.
Oh, do they?
Now, I said a good percentage of them, they carjacked somebody, so they at least they're riding in a new car for a minute.
How
do you do that? Okay. What is the solution, though? Do you pull up to the gas station with a gun strapped on your waist like one guy in the picture did? That's crazy.
Well, you know, I think that it's all kind of ways. Sometimes they do brandish a weapon, you know, a gun, a knife, or so forth. Sometimes it's just by brute force. But the something to parallel to look at is that Gary actually at one time was considered like the one of the, not necessarily the carjack capital, but they were probably in the top 10 in the nation of carjacking and car burglaries. part of the problem is that it's the social economics to one degree, and it's not a justification to commit crimes, but it's some of what Agent has said in terms of the government takeover. And so what they're saying is that now after the government takeover, you have a excessive or a major increase in carjackings. I mean, there's no basically infrastructure. So you don't really have the grocery store, the laundromats, or even the banks to rob anymore because a lot of them are going out of business. So what people have to understand is that it seems like these individuals are going to the I guess the quickest way to make money.
But Chris, I think one way to curtail it would be to have all these up and coming on the corner pawn shops that's on every corner now, and all these junkyards that take all this metal. To stop taking the metal, you need ID to do this. You need verification that it's yours to sell at the pawn shop. They made it so easy to get rid of whatever it is you stole that it's all right now. But until we actually crack down on the end process, not the beginning of the carjacking, the end process of where the parts go and where the you know the systems go, the little systems in the car and all other things that you sell at pawn shops, make it hard for it to be sold. Then people would stop buying it because there wouldn't be a market for it.
Go ahead, Gwen.
No, I was just thinking about the morale as a whole in Detroit, right? Because if you're thinking about, you know, the financial crisis, government takeover, the exodus that's occurring, right? And, I mean, that has to have an impact on morale, you know, on the young people trying to go to school there, the people who try, you know, who have to live there, can't afford to leave. Right? I was like Katrina, that stuck. So when the storm came in, they were stuck. So I think part of it also needs to be some type of something that can wake the people up, right? Because it's happening because no one's paying attention anymore. The village is no longer there. The community has broken down because of this crisis. And there's nothing positive being said about Detroit. You know, can you find a good thing that's happening in Detroit despite of? And build from that, right? Because the people who take pride into things protect their things, right? When the village knows it's safe and its needs are being met, it protects the village. So I think part of this new wave, and I can only imagine something else occurring as well, because right now the morale is low in Detroit. So it's carjacking today at enormous rates. It's going to be something else tomorrow because Detroit is not seen as a place of, you know, where people are living and the village and the mob and the corner stores are no longer there. So I think something else needs to be occur simultaneously with trying to address the carjacking. I think it's the morale as a state, as a city as a whole is what's being impacted, and that's why it's making it so easy.
And you're probably right. I mean, because, you know what, the thing is, if nobody's got any jobs, you know, nobody's got any money, you know, that's just an accident waiting to happen. I mean, and what I'm not understanding, the police are reporting that currently there is a high demand for, like, stolen wheels and tires. Well, where's the demand? Shouldn't the police be sticking something in the hole where the people are buying this stuff at? They got to be taking it somewhere. You know what
right.
I'm saying? So if they use those bait cars to bait people, they need to let them steal the car and see where they take it to. And that's the hole that they need to fill. That's the gap. Who's buying these cars? I mean, I'm not sorry. Who's buying these stolen wheels and who's buying these stolen tires?
Well, that's true, and what you and AJ said are true, but that's with the assumption that the police actually or the police department actually want to do something about the crime. With those many vehicles being carjacked or even attempted to be carjacked, I mean, there's no conceivable way you can make me believe that they don't know at least the majority of individuals or organizations, organized crime, that are involved in that. So unfortunately, it's money to be made. It's people to be paid off. Now, I'm not saying everybody is on the take, but by and large, even in Chicago where there's thefts of vehicles and there's chop shops and all those things, I know where they're at.
Yeah.
And that's just by default I know where they're at. So I'm not even on the street and the beat all the time.
Right.
So they do know. So it's twofold. It's a socioeconomic issue, but it's also a curation with the authorities as well, because I know there's a lot of good police officers in Detroit that are probably trying to do the best that they can under the circumstances. But until something turns around with the socioeconomic, and I'm not just blaming it or pitching it to the government, but again, it goes back to the village. There are enough white mainstream companies that are buying up properties and land in Detroit, but even the Japanese and the Chinese are. So
right.
When the comeback does come, black folks won't be anywhere to be found because there's no black entrepreneurs and people with money that are doing anything in Detroit. And when Detroit makes its comeback, it's going to be almost be off limits. It's going to, I mean, mark my words. If minorities don't take a part in that, they're going to be left from the table.
Yeah, just like Harlem.
It's going to be what?
Just like Harlem. I think they did the same
just
thing
like
in Harlem. Yep. They bought it all up. It got so boarded up, and nobody wanted a part of Harlem. And like you said, you knew they were going to come back. They bought buildings up. It wasn't us who was buying the buildings, right? It wasn't us who was buying up the land. And then when there was this, you know, boom, we weren't in the equations.
And I believe that's what's going to happen to Detroit. They also said, now, this is the police's, I guess, I don't know, cure for what's going on. Basically, they're saying they're basically taking and plastering the convicted carjackers' faces and prison sentences on billboards right now. Well, everybody knows the billboard business is just almost gone. So that's probably a cheap fix, and maybe people think that's effective, but obviously if it was that effective, that business wouldn't be on its way out of, you know. Oh, go figure. But that's what they're doing. That's their solution to fixing it. Okay. We're just going to take your picture and put it up there for everybody to see. Don't you think the neighborhood already knows who's stealing cars? I'm just saying.
Yeah, they do. And they probably even know where the cars have been taken to. And like they were saying, it's simple deduction. But that means that they will probably, just for the fanfare and public oversight, take
right.
a few card shots out and get a few people, but by and large, the kingpins are probably untouchable.
Ooh, probably true. No, it's probably true. And you know, because somebody's getting paid.
Right.
Somebody's getting paid. Yeah. So I'm going to leave it. Y'all know how to read between lines. Y'all know who's getting paid. Okay, y'all, listen. You know what? This story concerns me about the Postal Service changing these things, where they're changing things up. You know, they say they're losing money, and I believe that because, you know, UPS and FedEx are really good at what they do. So a lot of people are buying online and, you know, doing things like that. So it's changing the game. But at the same time, they're talking about taking away door-to-door service for millions of people. I'm talking millions of people where they will no longer be delivering your mail to your door. They will have you go to a common area like you do when you live in an apartment complex, and that's where you will get your mail. So there will be, like, exceptions for people, like, who are disabled. But other than that, if you're able-bodied and you don't like this, then you can pay a delivery tax, and then they'll bring it to your door. And someone said about 6 months ago on this show that eventually we were going to be taxed for everything, and now I can see it. When I saw that, the light bulb went off. Okay, we're being taxed with Obamacare. We're going to be taxed with this mail if we wanted to come to our door, and just some other avenues that I'm seeing. So literally in a minute, we're just going to be taxed for our toll taxes, and, you know, there's not going to be a check left. I'm just saying.
But do you know why the post office is running low on funds?
Why?
Well, because every year the post office pays billions of dollars to the government to be able to do the service. And they was actually fighting that before. About 2 years ago, it was a big thing. Post office saying, we can no longer pay you this money. But I don't know, you know, how you pay something, and you pay it so often that you just think it's automatic, and you're trying to figure out, okay, why are we paying this money? But the post office pays the government, you know, billions of dollars every year. For, I don't know if it's for use to have the U.S. on their name or whatever, but they were trying to stop that about 2 years ago, but the government was still saying that they owe this money, that they need to pay this money. It's like the government giving, you know, $2.3 billion to Israel every year because that's what we've done. They don't know why. They don't know where the money's going. They don't care where the money's going. That's just what we do. Send them a check.
So, y'all, this is what I know. I did a story a couple of years back. The Gigi people, I forgot. I want to say it's called Gigi. I hope I'm pronouncing it correct. There's some black people that live in some land in Georgia, live on some land in Georgia. Anyway, all of a sudden, this land that they've been living on all this time, the government is making them want to prove that it's theirs. Well, these people basically said it's been in their families generations and generations and blah, blah, blah. So when they first brought the story to me, I was because I have a real estate background, I was really just trying to say, y'all, it's going to be hard to prove that you own something if you don't have paperwork on it. Well, anyway, long story short, Let me start again. Little by little, the government started coming in and seizing property. And when the people began to fight back, what the government did was start cutting off services. So they cut off the garbage service. That didn't run them off. Then they cut off the mail service. That didn't run them off. And so the Gigi people live on this little island, and basically you have to get there by boat. So then they start saying, okay, the ferry is only going to come once a day instead of three times a day. So what they did was they were forcing those people to come out of there. And so I can see this issue with this mail service is a scary place for us to go. That's a slippery slope. Because when they start taking away one service or taxing you if you want to continue and start taking away other services, eventually they can force you off of a particular of a particular area. Does that make sense to anybody?
Yeah, it does. Listen, no, eventually America just going to take them blankets like they usually do.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's bigger than that. I think we all going to have to own responsibility. I mean, as taxpayers, as voters. See, the government is starting to do this because, right, all those surpluses, all of us just, you know, enjoying the luxuries of life, right, whether it's an entitlement program, whether they're this or that. We just assume it's there, right? When some of us are not teaching our kids how things come to be, grants, and then when the pocketbook has to get tightened because of mismanagement, lack of oversight, you know, people spending money, these folk are, once they get in the office, they make sure their insurance is covered, everything else while them is taken care of, but the people are not. And so now they're saying, okay, we don't have that disposable income, if you will, anymore. The taxpayers are starting to pay attention. So now we have to call it in. So a lot of this is because I think we've allowed government to do this. And, you know, and we've become complacent. So we're feeling the effects of us not paying attention to the systems, the things that we fought for, our ancestors fought for, the right to vote. We don't understand what it means. You know, before we
But I think we're at a place right now that people are so dumbed down, it's going to be a certain segment just ain't going to get up and do nothing. I mean, they just are so dumbed down. they ain't going to get it. I mean, it's just like they're high or something. I mean, it's just they're in the clouds up there. They don't understand. And even some of them, if they did understand, they're not willing to roll up their sleeves and get dirty.
Right.
Y'all agree with that? I mean,
America had so much practice with the indigenous Indians of this nation as far as moving them around every time they found value in their property that it's easy for them to do the same thing to the people in Georgia because there was, I have a friend at the same type of unit in South Carolina. I don't remember what they call him, but he was down here. He never wore shoes. He always walked around, and he had this arrogance about it, but I understood where he came from, but I was trying to tell him where you are, and I don't think he ever got it, but... They were having the same problem up there as far as the government saying that this isn't yours. But if you remember, the refrigerator wasn't Frigidaire's and wasn't Sears and wasn't all these other people that had it. It was an invention by a black man. The patent was just stolen so they could build whatever they wanted to build. So it's always been that way. We just don't say anything about it. We see it happen and we just raise our fingers and say, I'll point at it like, there you go again. And we just watch it walk off.
I think we better learn what Agenda 21 is. Agenda 21, if you go and Google it, it was a summit meeting in Rio de Janeiro several years ago where the leaders of you know, all the countries and, you know, nations and whatever. They all met. Let's just say that. And our president, you know, at that time went too. It wasn't Obama. It was George Bush, I believe. But anyway, that's it. In that meeting, they basically put their heads together and said, this is what we think is best for the people. So they decided what was best for the air, for the water, for the land, everything. And in that packet called Agenda 21, they decided that certain parts of this country was going to be basically they wanted it vacant. And so it's going to be, I forgot, bunkers. There's going to be bunkers around the United States where certain areas are going to be completely depopulated. When they started removing services like postal service or moving it around where, you know, you got to go pick it up, if you will, I think that just may be part of Agenda 21. That just may be me. But I just see that as being a very scary, slippery slope when they start removing services from the way we're traditionally used to them. Does that make sense to anybody?
Well, I just looked up Agenda 21. It sounds like it.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, I mean, Agenda 20, it's no joke.
Well, and you know
that's
what?
How they...
A lot of that.
Go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead. Well, and with that Agenda 21, I do know the way that they do it, and I know AJ, he alluded to the Native Americans, the indigenous people of this country. And I'll say this, and I'll move to the point to kind of fast forward. Keep in mind that not only did the government give the blankets, the smallpox, and do certain things, when it was deemed in the best interest of the U.S. government, they then also put bounties on men, women, boys, and girls, Native Americans. So much so that they then had to stop the bounties, meaning that you could kill them and kill indigenous people and bring them in. They're bringing in so many bodies. They then said, you know what? You don't even have to do that. Now you only have to bring in scalp with a little bit of the skin on it. Now, I said that to say, let us not think that the government, even though I'm in the military, think that certain factors or fashions within the government won't do what they need to do that they think is in the best interest for them. And that's why they don't want term limits, and that's why you see a lot of what's happening. So what you're talking about is true, and with the Postal Service, there, what you're going to find is just little by little, eventually, probably with the exception of a small segment, most of any public Postal Service is going to dry up, and it's going to be contracted out. Because if you think about it now, all the individuals that they have laid off are no longer with the Postal Service, it's contracted out to companies. The military, a lot of the things we used to do, cook, clean, do our own things, we don't even cook. A lot of the equipment that we have and we have requirements to utilize that equipment, it's done by civilian contractors. So the move is going to eventually be, I can see the writing on the wall, most of postal services is going to be contracted out, and there's not going to be very, there's going to be very few. Now, congressmen, senators, representatives, they are ensuring that their jobs and the money that they make and the retirements and the benefits that they want for them and future politicians are going to be there. But a lot of the infrastructure, like you said, traditionally what we know today, if we don't do something about it, it's going to continue to move to the left and it's going to be privatized.
I agree.
It's
being directed
that way, though, right? It's clearly being directed that way. I did a workshop at Yale, a presentation called The Second Bounce, and it was talking about predicting where the ball goes next. You know how when you first get a ball, you bounce it. You know where it's going because that's where you place it. But if you let it go, it could bounce anywhere. So there are those, I believe, in elected officials, those that make the decisions for our communities, in these back rooms. Trust me, not even in the back room, right? In the front room. They're so bold, they just do it in front of me. And say, right? They're making these decisions that are driving it to be privatized, right? When we're looking from education on down to our penal systems, our judicial system with the judges and these appointments, right? To control it, these appointments are to control who's in office, who you own. And so I believe a lot of this is so deliberate that it's driving it. So for us to get back traditional, we are going to have to be just as blatant and bold to try to drive it back. And the only way we will be able to do that is to counteract some of these elections, some of these people that are in office who are voting for these things, right? Because they have to go by certain lawmakers. They vote on these things. They make these ordinances. So we're going to have to be strategic. How we're going to do it, I don't know, because it takes courage, right? I don't think many of us have the courage of the civil rights era where people risked their lives. They knew they were going to be hosed, dogged, brutal. Parents were afraid for their kids who were going to do the Woolworth sit-in, right? I mean, parents didn't want to go out. I mean, you know, but yet they rose up. But we're not rising, right? Because we're complacent. We're good with $8.75. So,
but you know what? I think two reasons we're not rising up is fear, one. And then two, I think we're going to lose a lot of time because we are stuck on the fact we got a black president who we feel is going to take care of us. And I'm not saying that Obama is not doing an excellent job. But what I'm thinking is this. Obama can't save all of us. And he's just one man. And we are crazy if we sit for the rest of his term expecting him to fix all of our problems while we sit back and go, okay, well, we got a black president, so we don't have to worry about nothing no more. He can only do so much.
But he actually said that, though. I think people miss that. He said, when I first became, I'm just one man. It's the country, right? The people hold the power. This whole, I never was under the illusion, not one iota, that he was going to save the world, because unless he's changing water into wine and walking on water, then I didn't think none of that. So, you know, we need to get from out of that mentality.
We losing ground is all I can say, and we better get the boots on and be willing to get dirty, because, in my opinion, we're losing a lot of ground every day. We really are.
Yes,
I mean, Christopher, AJ, y'all don't agree with that?
I think we're losing ground, and the other thing I wanted to say in reference to the post office is is not just the post office, but it's what they're bringing the post office basically into the modern day times of other federal entities that they've all also done. And I wanted to bring this out so we understood the implications behind the economics of privatizing.
Right.
Something that's federal, that means that, i.e., the taxpayer is funding that, and there's budgets established from that money that then pay for that federal arm, entity, employers, retirement, all that stuff. When you privatize, just think back to Dick Cheney and Blackwater. When I was over in Iraq and Kuwait, and Blackwater was there, part of the reason that they were bringing combat troops out of Iraq is because a lot of the same functions that green suiters and all the other military components serve were being transferred to civilian contractors with weapons, with bulletproof vests, and all those things. Now, when you change federal to contracted, you now open the door for greater lobbying, greater amounts of money, and then stock and Wall Street. So now you now have the autonomy and the power to control who gets what contracts. Then you can also, it's like insider betting trading. Guess what? Now you have better information than the average public of which stocks to invest in. So now if this company is going to take over and they're going to be doing what a federal entity used to do, and you know they're going to do that even before it happens, who do you think you're posturing to switch your money, invest your money into? So you cannot tell me that congressmen, senators, and representatives are not investing into those things.
I agree.
Okay.
And to be clear, y'all, we're talking about 15 million addresses. So we're not just talking about, you know, a couple people. 15 million is a lot of addresses. Well, what do you want to bet is not going to be one senator's address?
Let me answer that part before we switch over. Because Chris stepped on some of it, but he went on. I said, well, let me go on and let him finish.
What?
And now I just wanted to say, as far as you said, are we losing time was the initial question.
Yeah.
And And I don't really think we're losing time. I think we're just missing time.
Right.
And I think the reason we're missing time is because we do have a black commander-in-chief, but we didn't put any of the generals and the people around him in position to help him with his decision-making. When he makes a decision, he can't make a decision by himself.
Very
we didn't want any of the supporting cast. It's like you like this movie, but you just pick the star, and you let all these other people that's never been in the movie play in the movie. It wouldn't be the movie you thought it was. So we've not supported him as we were supposed to when we initially elected him. So it's hard to get him to do anything that we want him to do. And as far as time goes, we're losing time and missing time because this era is almost over. And it will be a while before they let another black in that office because they've been trying to take America back ever since he's been in there.
This is so true.
But it's very good that you're saying that he's saying that, because I met a lawmaker when I was trying to get the law passed about stopping the arrest of parents, right, for educational theft. And I'll never forget, this was one of the most powerful black lawmakers in Connecticut. But he's saying, Gwen, I'm not going to risk my campaign because you need me on the inside unless you can provide me political covering. And what he meant by that is, you know, you need to organize the people. So without the people, you know, I won't go but so far. And that's what it was with Obama, right? We didn't, you said, I think it was AJ that said it. You know, we didn't give him that covering as a country so that when he took on hard issues, the people and, you know, coming together collectively could have, you know, put a push back on some of that attack that was against him. So some of the issues that he could have taken on, he probably didn't take on because we didn't give him the covering that he needed to go the distance.
You know what? I think, and I'll say this, and we're gonna move on. I think what happened is we were not prepared for a black president. The black people, that is, we're not prepared for a black president. So how were we gonna help him when we didn't even know he was gonna get there? I mean, we voted for him and we hoped for the best, but you know, nobody really expected it to happen. And so we didn't even have the backup plan in place just in case our guy won. I mean, so I think that's what happened, and I think we've been still playing catch-up, and he's been in office now 6 years. I think we just didn't have a plan for it if he won. Okay, listen, y'all, we're going to talk about term limits. Term limits, since Christopher went there just a few minutes ago, for these politicians. Y'all, listen, some of those jokers been in there 34, 35, I mean, darn near 40 years. Is that too long? I mean,
yes, it is, and it's criminal. It's like furniture. They've been there longer than some furniture they got on the wall in the White House.
Oh, they make you tired, some of them. I mean, because, you know, the thing is, it's just like anything else. You gotta be versatile. You got to be flexible. You know, you got to be able to keep up with modern days. A lot of them are so old. Their thinking is back when they started and how things used to be. And I think it's hard to change somebody's mind like that when they're set in their ways. Don't you think we ought to have term limits so we can keep fresh ideas moving and keep things up to date and modern, as opposed to people like Cheney who have set mindsets and who was that, Rumsfeld? You can't move them guys. I mean, they're not here now. I know that, y'all, so don't think I'm, like, you know, lost. I'm just saying those guys, when they were in office, It was all old school. You couldn't change that. And so that's what we're still dealing with, a lot of those old Republicans and Democrats that's in there now. It's old school thinking.
So I don't think it's age. So I wouldn't necessarily say there's need room for age. I just think that anything, when you are allowed to be something, no term limits, you get complacent, you have an expectation of automatic. I'm automatically going to get in. I don't have to fight for the people. I don't have to listen to them anymore because I'm automatically going to get here. But I think time limits, irregardless of age, you know, means you're going to have to, you're going to have to shine, make it matter, make it count, versus automatically. So I think complacency, even more so to me than age, can make could not work in the best interest of the people.
As far as term limits, I don't really, you know, I think there should be some term limits, but I think the problem is we closed our eyes while they made different rules and regulations for the people to be even having the ability to be elected or to run for office.
Right.
So when they made those stipulations so hard, you have these people, these incumbents, running, and they don't have anybody running against them. So even if nobody votes for them, two people vote, they won. So to me, the problem is they made it so hard, and they wouldn't where you just vote Republican or Democrat. So that way, you know, when the big election come, you just have these two people running. But I think we can control more of this process than we believe we can.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I agree too.
Go ahead, Christopher.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that, I mean, 1820, 1830, around that time frame, most of Congress and the Senate pretty much operated on a no more than two terms. And, in fact, it was encouraged, and the original intent was for representatives from their district and their areas to come, have one or two terms, and then after that, someone else would take a term, like you said, to kind of keep it fresh, to kind of keep things moving, have other ideologies and opinions and so forth. And I think that was a better embodiment of having something in a rotation that gave people better opportunities. And then also at that time, representatives, congressmen, they were only paid when they were in session, and they were paid approximately $16 every time they came to session. Then, if you wanted to have staffers, assistants, you had to pay them on your own dime or out of that $16. And I think by 1850, it kind of went up to, I think they said it went up to like $100 that they paid per session. But it was never intended for congressmen to be making $174,000 starting expense accounts, campaign slush funds, and so forth. So you're right. And then individuals get in there, it's like passing the cup. Oh, hey, Bill, you know, I've been there for 18 years. You know, I'll support you, and then you come on in here, and, you know, this is a good thing here. So it's not about being a civil servant, and it's really not even about the people. For, I think, by and large, some are still there under that, but I think you kind of just get washed out when you're in there, and it never really was intended for that. But that's why those rascals and lobbyists will fight you tooth and nail if you say anything about a term limit.
And you know what the thing is, I agree with you, and they have figured out how to make it work for them. They said basically if a challenger doesn't spend $200,000 like in advertising, he won't defeat the incumbent. I mean, so that guy, it's like or female, male or female. Basically, once they get in there, you got to work hard to get them out. I mean, and if they do any bit of good, period, it's like moving a stone. And so I think people got to realize the term limits is not working for us because these guys getting clicks up there, and they decide to vote in blocks. You know, so if one nods to the other one, don't do this, and everybody's in agreement. And I don't think we want politicians in there like that. We want politicians that are keeping up to date with what's going on, and they feel the needs of the people. And they think of the people before they think of themselves. And I think that's what's wrong. That's not happening for us now. Do y'all agree with that?
I agree. When I signed on, I just clicked like on Facebook.
You did what?
They have a on Facebook, term limits for U.S. Congress. I click like. I'm in.
I'll join the night myself.
and see, my thing is, I think when we let them label corporations as people, and then they took the limit off of what you can donate per campaign, now you have hundreds of millions of dollars in these budgets for the next group of Republicans running, regardless of who they are. They already got money in the budget.
You know,
You don't even have to say who you are and donate the money.
Yeah.
I think we could completely change the game if we got rid of term limits and lobbyists. I think that's what spoiled the whole bunch, is lobbyists and term limits.
I think lobbyists are needed. I think lobbyists, I guess there just needs to be more better, you know, transparency and clarity. Because when I look at the history of lobbyists, I remember going to a training and the guy called me a whore, and I wasn't happy. Yes, it was a he's a white guy. He said, because I said to him, I need to know how to yield power like those lobbyists. He said, oh, you want to be a whore? I said, well, you need to find another word because you can find another word for that. because I'm not knocking people for being skilled at what they do, because we need someone to advocate on behalf. I just think for lobbyists or advocates, some people say advocates or lobbyists, I think it's how we're using the word, fighting on behalf of those who can't advocate for themselves, especially in that political arena. It's just a part of people have used it to exploit and take advantage of. I think there could be some good in being an advocate. I think maybe I might be using the word more like an advocate versus a lobbyist, but I think a lobbyist is an advocate, for me. That's how I look at it. It just needs to be a transparent, and, conflicts of interest need to be disclosed up front. And, some things you just can't do. If you know the lawmaker, if you're the lawmaker's brother, then you can't be both. Some things need to be, cut in stone. But I don't see a bad thing in lobbyists.
I agree. Well, Christopher, I agree 100%. Christopher's got to get out of here, but I thought he'd weigh in on this topic before he bails on us. That botched execution in Oklahoma this week of Clayton Lockett. Now, that had a whole lot to do with the drugs, y'all. They basically, this young man, went in for an execution. He asked prior to going in, I want to know, what are these new drugs that y'all finna give me? And we lost Christopher on the line. But anyway, he said, he even petitioned the courts, I want to know what these new drugs are that they're going to be given in Oklahoma. And Oklahoma has some secret rule about not giving you the names of the drugs. So they wouldn't disclose who the manufacturer of the drugs were or what the drugs were. That said, so this young man goes in to be executed, and everything goes wrong. And so basically the timeline, y'all, it just went all over me. Just listen to the timeline. This is how it went. It's 6:23. Lockett is basically asked, do you have any final words? And basically he said he refused, to give a final statement, so they moved on. So at that particular time, he was administered the first drug. At 6:30, that's already 6:23, at 6:30, the doctor checked Lockett for consciousness, and they said he was still conscious, okay? Then at 6:33, Lockett was checked again, and he was unconscious. The next two drugs were administered. Okay, that's 6:33. So it's 10 minutes later. Okay, by 6:42, they closed the blinds. I don't mean to laugh, y'all. They closed the blinds, and the phlebotomist and the doctor checked the IV because something was wrong. At 6:44, so between 6:44 and 6:56, the doctor checked the IV and reported that the blood, his blood veins had collapsed. And that the drugs had either been absorbed into his tissue or they leaked out, or both. So at 6:56, they had to call the director. And they was like, listen, I'm going very wrong. And they were like, did you do this? Did you do that? Did you do this? Did you do that? Trying to find out all the checks and balances. Did you give him the drug? Was it enough drugs to take him out and this, that, and the other? But anyway, botched execution. So my question is, can they give you a drug, even if you're on death row, can they give you a drug, not even tell you, what drugs you're taking and who made the drugs? I mean, it went wrong. This guy, they said, he died 43 minutes after his execution began. Isn't this typically something that happens in 7-8 minutes, you're out of here?
It just sounds so cruel. I mean, I know the man don't warrant. It just sounds, the bottom line is the man had constitutional rights, right, whether we agree with the laws or not. I mean, the inmate on death row had constitutional rights, so you got to wonder, was that, I would be concerned as a family member whether you agree with what he did or not. I just think, people have the right to know. Just like we do disclosures at pharmacies and everything else. I mean, what can he do with the information? I still think that was I don't even want to know what his insides were like. The pain. Again, some people say, well, he was on death row, so who cares? But
this is the part that really got to me, y'all. I don't know if he did something to himself because he was trying to offset this execution. I'm not sure. But they said that they had tried to use the veins in his arms, in his legs, and in his neck, and none of them were usable. So they inserted the IV into his groin. Now, I'm sure that's not typical. I'm sure that's not typical. So could that have messed up things? You know, were they so set on doing the execution that night that they put it in a place that typically they would put it in, which caused everything to go haywire? AJ Houston, where you at?
I'm waiting for y'all to finish.
No. Go ahead.
Now, I say my opinion is this. I think it's wrong, you know, because the drugs that they get from overseas. But the overseas people stopped shipping the drugs because they say they weren't shipping the drugs for what they call inhumane for death row. And that's why it's not that they're not making the drugs. They couldn't get the drugs because they stopped shipping the drugs for what they was using the drugs for.
Hmm.
And that was first. See, the second thing is I really think it's horrible because me, I was always with the old school, the electric chair and the hanging because back in the days when you were a defector or whatever they was getting ready to do in the Western, in Texas. Yeah, you know, I'm a Texan born and raised, so in Texas they used to hang people a lot, you know. And that's what they did to cow thieves and horse thieves and but I know a lot of people don't agree with death row, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying if you whatever you're in for, there's this whole moral standard that you have to go through even to have this conversation, you know what I'm saying?
No, I agree. You know what I think? This is what I think. I think people who basically are for death row, you know, they say, well, they committed a crime, they should serve their time and, you know, be punished or whatever. But I'm starting to really, you know, rethink this death row thing. And I'm really starting to think that there's two ways in which, you know, I'm one of these people who say, listen, you know, them sitting there watching cable TV and, you know, three meals a day and all that, which we know y'all, you know, by all accounts, that food ain't that great. But anyway, that aside, I think it's two ways that you can fix this system because everybody says that, you know, we're paying for it, and we are. But I think we shouldn't be paying for it. I think there's enough things out there to be done that they could have the inmates working their own, paying their own way. I think it's ridiculous to have an inmate sit on a cot all day smoking a cigarette and watching TV. That's ridiculous. That's an accident waiting to happen. But I think if you put them out every day and you put them to work and you give them something to do all day, by nighttime everybody would go to sleep because they'd be too tired to do anything else. And so make them pay their own way for being housed.
But when you talk about inhumane, what if they just decided not to and then they wasn't eating, they didn't have food, and you say, hey, you're letting those people starve. So you have to look at when
you're
looking
at the
big
picture. Did you say they refused to work?
No, I said, what if they did? I'm saying, now they're making their own way.
I said, what if you say they refused to work?
Yeah, if they refused to work and refused to do whatever, then they wouldn't eat. Then people would consider it inhumane that you're letting these people here, not feeding them.
Okay, AJ, you know what? This isn't Burger King. You can't have it your way. If you commit a crime, you got to start. Either it's going to be a death penalty or.
You can't just look at it. The one thing you have to open, when you open the big picture, there's so many edges to the circle. You can cut yourself.
But what we're doing ain't working because we're paying for grown men and grown women to sit and watch TV all day, and we're draining the piggy bank dry. I mean, I'm just saying as far as the death penalty.
I got a solution for that, Carrie, but I can't tell you on center stage. No, I'm actually writing a movie script right now.
Are you serious?
I'm working on a treatment. It's a story that I created some years ago, but I'm trying to, you know, I'm turning to a treatment and a movie script because I'm like, I think the movie would be so devastating that people would be angry at the concept that they would pay to go see the movie.
And you might be right, and there may be a better way. I just worked in the system just a short period of time. It was not for me, y'all. But I worked in the system just a short period of time, long enough for me to know it wasn't for me.
It wasn't like McDonald's, huh?
It was time to go. They didn't pay enough money because I came to the realization that every time they slammed them doors when I went in, I was doing time too. So I just decided this is I did. I went home one day and go, you know, 8 hours a day times 40 hours a week, I'm doing time. Because everything they experience, the smells, the door slamming, you know, the screaming, the inmate fighting and all that, I was right there for that. And that was affecting me, and I just realized that just wasn't the job for me. But, you know, trial and error. But at the same time, I realized something's wrong with the system when we're paying for people to be housed who are criminals who are able-bodied and can work that off. So that's just my opinion, and I'm off subject a little bit, y'all, and I apologize. But
I agree with you, but I'm saying when you open up the big picture, there's a whole lot of other things. Because I've done some prison ministries where I went and did creative writing classes in prison. And, you know, in the Houston area, when you go and there's like six doors that close behind you, and they tell you not to wear white T-shirts and not to wear jeans, and then you start worrying about what you're wearing because you don't want to be on your way out, and then they think you belong there.
I agree with you that, I mean, inside there you can create some skills because there's some people, you know, from farming age, back in the day, our ancestors weren't educated per se with the ABCs necessarily, 1, 2, 3s, but they knew how to farm. They knew how to do mechanics. They knew how to do certain things. So I do believe you can give some trades in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they come it out, they at least have some trades under their belt. But at a minimum, they're working on some of the things that we probably pay privatized companies to do. And the only thing you'll be paying for is someone to oversee the project. And it wouldn't be a project. It'd be actually a job, right? They'll be doing a job that can meet the need of something in America. Because prisons
right. Maybe we need to rethink death row. Maybe this is inhumane. But at the same time, I'm not saying let him go. But make them work and make them do something and every day and be productive citizens, even though they're incarcerated. This is crazy. I mean, I don't know. Just execution just really made me rethink it. This man basically, his vein collapsed, and it wasn't even noticed for 21 minutes because they got you covered up. And so basically they said that he convulsed, and then he tried basically to raise his head. So these dodos that were administering these drugs didn't even know what, I guess, to expect. So all this is going on before, I guess, somebody's light bulb went off and said, whoa, maybe we got a problem here, Houston. And then they got on the phone and started calling around and said, you know, what we did ain't working. And so there was another execution that was planned right behind his. And that young man got blessed by this situation, and they had to stay his execution. Mr. Warren, I believe his name was, Charles Warner was scheduled to be executed right behind Lockett. But due to this, they had to stop. So the syringe was already made for Mr. Warner. And so they decided due to this investigation, because both syringes contained the exact same antidotes or what do you call it, dosages, and they were, I think, stamped for the same serial number and the same company and everything. Basically, they came from the same batch, that they were going to take that syringe and have it tested. And now they're going to decide, okay, does this work or not? But my question is, they going to test it on who? I mean, really? I'm just trying to figure out, where are we going with this? Who are you going to test it on? I mean, if the first one didn't work, I would just kind of assume that the second one ain't going to work, so rethink the whole thing, but they're going to test it and see what went wrong. I said, on who? That's crazy. And so the whole state of Oklahoma is in the uproar over this, and the governor has stayed the execution of the next person for 60 days, which is the max that they can, and she's willing to extend it out even further until they find out what the heck went wrong. And even President Obama has weighed in. Basically, he's asking the attorney general to look into this whole death row scenario in Oklahoma, I guess, to check and see if this is actually the way we need to be going, which is a good thing, don't y'all think? Gwen, AJ?
Well, Carrie, I think it's a good thing, but I think the problem is once, you know, because it might be someone on death row that don't belong.
Yeah.
But I don't, I don't think there's a lot of mistakes in that arena of the law.
Really?
Or at least the way they gauge the law, you know what I'm saying? Because in Texas, you had a whole lot of people going on the amnesty program. You had a lot of people got out of jail. They were doing 15, 20 years in jail, and got out after that period and found that they were not guilty. So I think that there are some other things within the system that need to be checked out. But I really think that once, you know, like in other countries, if you steal something, you get your hand cut off. You know, you see a one-handed man, and you kind of know that. I hope you learn from that other thing, because if you steal one more time, you know, you're gonna be eating with nubs. And I don't think that we have I guess a charge and payment system. We don't have a way of indicating what we need to do to substantiate on how we correct the problems that we have, or how we correct the problem that we face, or what the term is supposed to be. See, if everybody got the same amount of time in prison, instead of it being this, I guess, this bad disparity between a black person and a white person doing the same thing, and the black person getting 2 and 3 times more time than the white person.
Right.
I would think the penal system had something going on, but it's hard to gauge. That's what I'm saying. When you open this big, you look at through this big microscope and you see everything, it's hard to pinpoint which part of this conversation we need to really adjust, because there's a lot of moving parts in this amoeba right here.
Well, remember the boy, and I know Gwen is familiar with this story, but it happened here in the area where AJ and I are. Remember the young man who killed those 4 people, but he was a young man with means, or his family had means, and so instead of him being sentenced to any jail time, they basically gave him probation and sentenced him to some type of rehab place, and his family is paying, you know, bukus, you know, in lawsuits, and they think that's the fix. I mean, really, the judge thinks that's the fix for that problem. That's ridiculous.
But remember the same thing. The Dallas Cowboy that was in a car accident, drunk driving, and killed his best friend.
I would say. Yeah.
Had, you know, they tried to give him probation, but he, you know, he was hanging out with people, because I think it's a traumatic thing to do that and still be conscious, and, you know, you can't drink, not supposed to smoke weed or whatever. And it was hard for him to deal with and isolated from the other people he was hanging with. So he was drinking. He actually had to do some time. But the guy that got off after killing 4 people, it was like, what did they say? What did they charge him with? They called it, I'm trying to think. It was just so stupid. I said, I'm not even going to remember this ever in my life.
Didn't they say affluenza?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was trying to forget it. Yeah, exactly. I was trying to forget that. Because I'm like, I've never heard this in my life, somebody, because he was such an affluent person that he didn't know that he wasn't supposed to drive drunk and kill people.
He said, I was trying to forget it.
Is that what he said?
Really, I was, because I'm saying that's a travesty. That is a shame.
Yeah.
But you know what? It scares you to think that just because you have means that you would be that stupid. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that you would think that your child should get off just because. I mean, they use this as a defense and won, that this child was so, you know, had so much influence that basically he was totally oblivious to consequences, and so therefore he killed these people, but he didn't mean it. That's okay, because we know a lot of people have killed.
I didn't mind them using that as the argument.
Yeah.
I just had a problem with them winning with that argument.
You know, exactly.
I'm saying you can use whatever argument you want. I'm cool with that, you know. But you shouldn't win with stupid stuff as though, this. Hey, that's logical to me. I'm like, that's not logical to anybody.
Right.
You know, if you really were to go back and think about the Charles Manson era, and in California, I think there is no death penalty. But, you know, if anybody ought to be in jail, you'd think Charles Manson would be in jail, but, you know, he's still alive today. So the whole system is off. You know, I mean, it's just really off. You know, somebody who kills somebody, you know, viciously, you know, you may find out, you know, he gets off, where somebody else did it accidentally and, you know, they don't. Remember the lady that drowned all her kids in the tub? I think they sent her to a crazy house. You know, it's not balanced in terms of, you know, to me, anybody who goes and butchers somebody to death or shoots somebody 20 times has got to be crazy. But that's not obviously how the system looks at it. So when you get through, one person does it and they say they're crazy, and then another person does it and they say, well, you don't have enough money, so you get jail time. That's crazy. So that, you know, that's why this botched execution really made me rethink the system that we have in place, and is it humane, you know, and for whatever, you know, debts he owed to the world for what he did, he had served his time in jail, and it came his time to die, and I think the whole death thing should have taken probably 7 minutes, and we're talking 43 minutes later that this guy dies, and he eventually died of a heart attack. So it's just crazy. So hopefully they're going to get it all worked out in Oklahoma before the next execution with this other guy. But I'm sure a lot of lawsuits are going to come behind this one to make them disclose what's going on. But basically, what did they say? The spokesman for the United Nations Human Rights Office in Geneva said Locke's prolonged execution could amount to cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment under international international human rights law. And basically, he said that the execution in the United States, the executions in the United States this year after Dennis McGuire's death in Ohio on January 16th with basically an allegedly untested combination of drugs was the same as this one. Why are we administering, you know, the death penalty to people with drugs that have not been tested? And basically he's like asking that we call off this whole death penalty thing and rethink it because he feels that the way we're doing it here, it just ain't even humane. And I have to agree with him. I mean, if this is not the first case.
But have the same entity spoken up on the missing girls?
No, I guess not.
See, my thing is this. I love it when people chime in on some other things, but they're not addressing issues that need to be addressed. So I understand his point. I understand his point. And that's cool, you have a point on this matter. But if you can't effectively help us find some people that haven't done wrong, that are in the wrong position because somebody took them. But you want to talk about somebody that was in a position where they knew what day, what time they were supposed to die. But you're not addressing other issues that matter. I think this world has gone backwards.
Yeah, you know what? And that's the weird thing about what's going on in our world. It's as though our whole world has been turned over to a reprobate spirit. And if anybody's a Bible person, they'll know that a reprobate spirit is when wrong is right and right is wrong. It's basically like God has just wiped his hands of you, and he's allowing you to just do whatever you want to do. And, of course, your mind is so warped, you don't even know you're doing wrong. And so it almost seems like that's where we are. We have and y'all, I'm not homophobic, so please understand that, and I've said it 100 times. But it seems like we have an abortion agenda in this country. We have a gay agenda in this country. And whatever your choices may be, in my opinion, let those be your choices, but don't influence our youth. You know, it's hard enough to be a young person in this world as it is. I mean, for them to be getting all kind of mixed messages about what to be and how to be it, I just think we should stop. I just think I don't know what's going on. I mean, I just don't get it. But why in the world would those two agendas be so front and center everywhere we go? But they are.
I can explain that to you, Carrie. The reason being is because there's a total infringement on the First Amendment rights.
Right.
It didn't start with Sterling or Mark Cuban, but Sterling was the first instance to where it completely got out of hand, because I still don't agree that he said what everybody said he said in his statement for everything to come out like it is, because they wanted to prosecute him for his past and his present. That was just a crack in the door to get there. And I think what we've done is we don't want anybody to say what they feel about anything unless they feel like we feel about what they're about to say they feel about. That makes sense?
I agree. But, you know, the thing is, I don't want to tell anybody how to feel, but I do. I think I've gotten old enough in my life to know that you'll be shocked sometime who you're influencing with the things that you say. And so I'm very careful when I'm around young people or, you know, or anybody who may be impressionable, that I don't leave them with what I think. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm not here to make choices for people. I think young people should be able to grow and make up their own minds. But I think the media right now is bombarding young people with messages that abortion is okay. And I'm not saying I'm pro or against abortion, but I just think everybody, that's a walk that you should take alone. And nobody should influence you to go one way or the other. And as a Christian,
I'm in agreement with you, but I'm saying when you have one side that won't even let the other, you have one side of the media that won't even let the other side be heard.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The infringement on your First Amendment rights is that my opinion has to matter if yours matter.
Yeah.
Yours can't be the only opinion that matters, but now we're in a society where only one side of the opinion matters, and that's the side that has the money, the side that can put it out there and keep it out there. So if you say anything against it, that means that you are against what they're saying. It's like, no, that's not your opinion. You're just against them. No, this has been my opinion before they had theirs, before you listened to what theirs was.
That's why it's important to teach young people to make informed decisions. Same thing with parents. I work with parents. And I don't believe in filtering. I don't believe in this dictatorship. Parents, you need to do it this way or that way. You teach people the skills so that they can make informed decisions for themselves, because then we become like the other side when we kind of dictate and tell people what to do. So you're right. I do believe that our young people should have the right to choose what they want, but we also have an obligation to teach them how to make informed decisions so they won't be so easily swayed one way or the other.
That's true. And unfortunately, we have so many young people that are, how do I say this politically correct, are in homes where they don't have two-parent households, or they're in homes where maybe the parent is on drugs, or, you know, some situation in which basically they don't have the best household. And so for there to be adults who know better out there influencing them about their sexuality or influencing them about what to do if they somehow become pregnant, I think that's a terrible thing. I just think, I don't know, I just think, wow, there's some evil there. There's some true evil there. But I'm going to get off that soapbox. But I'm just saying, that's just something I see. It's just almost everywhere we go that there seems to be this push by certain groups to just really, it just seems to confuse people. But anyway, I'm going to move on. Okay, y'all, let's go to the lighter.
And they got lots of money to make you confused, too. So there's the groups who are influencing it. They have very deep pockets. So that's why they're able to control the media, that's why I'm for term limits. You know, I'm reading this website on Facebook, I mean, and I'm kind of loving it here.
But see, I'm going to put it out there since Gwen went. I had moved on, but since Gwen went there, I'm going to help you. A lot of people believe that what this is all about is the globalists want to depopulate us. So one way to depopulate us is if men, you know, are involved in same-sex unions and women are involved in same-sex unions, then there's not going to be any new children being birthed. That's the first layer of it. And then the second layer, when someone does become pregnant, if you encourage them to have an abortion, again, there's no new birth, so there's no new life. So when you're going around thinking, well, there's nothing wrong with that, I don't know why they feel that way, that's why I feel that way, because the agenda behind the scenes is bigger than what you're seeing in front of the scene. I'm just putting it out there.
Right.
But anyway, so that's what I'm hearing is going on. And when someone told me that, the light bulb just went off, and I thought, you know what? It's got to be something bigger. It's got to be something bigger. And I believe that they're right on that. But okay, y'all, we're going to talk about these Muslims, or a Muslim, that was accepted to Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, which I thought was very interesting. Now, this seminary, all of these years, has had the policy that you had to be a believer. You had to be a born-again believer to be a part of the seminary. Now they've decided that because this Muslim person, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with him, I'm just saying their policy. And so their policy had been that you had to be a born-again believer. This person is not a believer. They are a Muslim. They're a Sunni Muslim from Palestine. So the issue becomes, are we opening that door just enough where you know, we're opening a can of worms and maybe we shouldn't. If your policy is that you're a Christian institution that is producing, you know, ministers for the gospel, is it a smart thing to bring a non-believer in and the next thing you know, you may be influenced by his thinking? Do y'all, I mean, am I wrong or am I right on that?
I think you're wrong. I'm sorry.
Really? Tell me why.
Yeah, and the reason I think you're wrong is, see, okay, historically, okay, for my opinion to be valid, I'd have to go back to the University of Luxor.
Mm-hmm.
In Africa, the first university, is where everybody was invited in because knowledge is power. They didn't care where you came from. If you came to seek knowledge, that was what you were given. So I think it's a smart move because if you believe in what you say you believe, nobody can come in there and change your mind on your doctrine. You know, because when you look at any religious belief, I think I had written it down before. I think there is 134 religions that has an immaculate reception.
Mm-hmm.
134 religions that has that story, immaculate reception, like Mary's. There's mm-hmm. also in Horus and on the walls in Egypt was a lot of the stories that you see that are some stories similar to the Bible. So you go to the Egyptian Book of the Dead. You know,
mm-hmm.
you look at the Apocrypha, you look at the Nicene Creed. So I think when you bring somebody in and you teach them your doctrine, you're trying to convert them, regardless of what they came with. And I think once you have the full, if it's the whole truth and nothing but the truth, it's going to always be the truth.
Hmm.
Right. That's how I kind of look at it. Right. I actually thought of it like he thought of it, knowledge is power. And so when I saw, you know, heard about this young man going into this the school, you know, maybe he's looking at other things, right? He's, you know, working it out within his own. You know, even the Bible said work out your own soul salvation. So maybe he's trying to work some things out. Am I understanding the other side? So that's how I looked at it, you know, wanted to be exposure. I think our community, the more you're exposed to things, you change your thinking. So I kind of thought of it along those same lines, kind of.
And if you want to go by the Bible says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly divided. Most people miss that part right there. Rightly divided in the word of truth, which means
right.
that truth might look the same from different sides, but that don't mean it's the same.
Right. Very good.
See,
but if you don't know it yourself, you can be easily persuaded to somebody else's truth.
Let me go here. And this is just another angle. You can find it in the archives. I can't tell y'all what. It is also on YouTube. I just don't remember when I did the show, but it was a couple of years ago. I was crazy enough to do a show with some black atheists. Because, I used to think being a black atheist was an oxymoron. How can that be? You know, all that God has done for us. But, of course, I'm a believer. And so I had talked to some atheists, and I know quite a few. And I thought, you know what? I thought I'd come up with this brilliant idea that I'm going to do a show on black atheists. Listen, that was the longest 2 hours of my life. I could not find another Christian who wanted to come on and debate them. They said, Carrie, don't do it. And I thought, you know.
I did a show with some of them.
No, it was a show specifically called Black Atheists. And no, you're talking about with Meatball and all of them, they're atheists too. But we did a show specifically, it's an archive of black atheists, and it was just the craziest thing. The show for the first 5 minutes, I couldn't even get in the switchboard. And when I finally did get on, I wish I hadn't. I mean, they wore me out. It was like, it was 10 rounds. It felt like I was beat down because they have such strong beliefs about what they believe in. And some of them knew the Bible better than I did. And I'm saying all that to say, I still think I probably made a mistake doing that show. One lady called in and she said, she did. She was like, listen. No, it was a bunch of callers, but this lady was a Christian. And this lady said, sister, don't let them change you. You know, you might be back. And the gist of what she was saying, because I can't remember exactly the word she said, but the gist of what she said is, you in an arena that you need to come out of, because these people are really deep into what they believe, and unless you are really strong in what you believe in, they'll persuade you. That's what she was saying. And so I'm saying that about the Muslim. Did they open the door where it seems like, okay, well, it's just one, and then the next thing you know, he comes and brings all his friends, and then all his friends may know the Bible better than you do, and then the next thing you know, they're changing the doctrine over there at the seminary. That's just my point.
Okay, I look at it like this. I had there was a Jehovah's Witness, whatever they were. Like three, it was like two ladies and a man came to my door one time some years ago. And, you know, I invited them in. You know, I was working on some new poetry, so I'm like, okay, I need some new information to write on. So I invited them in. And they were talking to me, and they were talking. I let them finish. And then they asked me. I was talking to them, and they left. And about 2 days later, a big white van pulled out of my house. It was about nine people in it. But the guy that taught them that they was bringing to my house to talk to me, because they was like,
hey,
this guy told us something. We want you to come and talk to him, because we don't know if we write or he write.
See? That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
But that's good, though. But there's nothing wrong. I mean, I think, okay, you also have to be grounded. So I do agree with the lady that called you, right, that you have to be grounded. But, you know, there are times I listen to other people, because there are people who take the truth, right, and twist it, right? You ever notice they add the truth mixed in with not truth, and it sounds like you could be so easily persuaded. But I also think you have to be grounded. And I also think as Christians that we have to be able to, that we're out there, you know, giving the message. Because whoever controls the airways, whoever controls access to the people can control the message. So I actually think that I don't see anything wrong with healthy discussions, right? Because just like they brought nine to think if you're right, for all you know, they can hear the word of God and be converted themselves. So I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. I just think that the person that's inviting that has to be grounded, right? Everyone can't do that. I agree with you.
But this guy is smart. He's working on his doctoral. And allegedly he done volunteer work, or no, I'm gonna say they said he done volunteer work basically at the seminary since 2008. He was a volunteer in the archaeology department, and he had gone with them to Israel, and I guess he had formed some friendships with them and liked them. So he said, you know, I like you guys so much, I want to come study with y'all. And so allegedly that's how they decided to accept him. However, we know about the devil is he's subtle. He ain't just going to hit you with. And so I'm just saying, I'm not calling him a devil, but I'm just saying the devil himself, he comes subtle. He doesn't just, you know, just bombard you with anything. So my thing is, are we opening a door? So now when you open that door and you say one can come in, are you setting the precedence now that others have the right to come in? And then the next thing you know, you have a Bible class full of Muslims versus Christians on what does the Bible really mean?
Well, see, I think at first you have some rules in the school on how the classes are in.
Right.
So they can come in and voice their opinion, but there's no way that they can add to the information that you're actually disseminating. And my thing about this is I would love to have a conversation with anybody with whatever religion or whatever they believe in, as long as we're having a conversation. Because sometimes when you have people come in, the only way they get their phone over, only way to get their phone over is not to listen to yours.
Yeah, sure.
Right, right. And it's interesting how you say that, though, because if you notice, there are a lot of people who are turning away from God, right? Their hearts are going cold because of all the rituals and the forms of religion that is going into these houses. So, you know, I like what AJ said. You know, we're having a conversation, because if you listen to some folk and some of their experiences, sometimes you're able to negate what they thought was Christianity based on their exposure. So I think by having those conversations, you get to hear other points of view of why they've chosen to do certain things. Then you can talk about God as you know him to be, based on the word of God. And then for all you know, they can say, wow, that's not my experience with it, based on X, Y, Z. So you might be converting some folks. So again, I do believe in a conversation. I do believe you can always learn from someone. Because I always tell people, if your higher power telling you to go out and hurt people, then you better question your higher power, because you can't talk about you a fan of humanity and your higher power saying take everybody out with you. You know, so, you know, sometimes you're able to, you know, help people
think
things through.
That's the main point right there. You just made the main point. The main point is that we were born knowing the difference between right and wrong. We just wanted to see what we can get away with. So if you have the belief in any higher being, whether you call it God, Jah, Selassie, or whatever you want to call it, Muhammad, there's no way that anybody of, I guess, reputable means would have you doing wrong things in the name of them.
See, but right. You know what? That's funny you say that. Let me back up first to what Gwen said. When you're talking about converting people over, sometimes you have to be careful about being converted yourself. Because if we have, you know, it's kind of like, I think I heard T.D. Jakes say, I can tell what kind of thinking you have just by looking in your phone, because I can look at who you hang out with and then I know how you think. Well, the same thing about spending time with people who you're trying to convert. If you ain't careful, they may convert you.
Maybe it's another word, but again, the primary for me is having those conversations, right? Mm-hmm. And then you could talk about, you know, why your belief system says this and your belief says that. And then, you know, for all you know, someone, and I'm saying converted for lack, you know, maybe there could be another word, because converted does sound like Jim Jones. Right, but what I'm trying to say is, you get to say, oh, okay, well, I would like to know more about that, because if your God is a God of compassion, and I'm taught that I'm supposed to beat everybody up who don't disagree with me, there might be something to what you're saying, you know. So I think just being able to reason, you know, because even more God talking about, we're reasoning with one another. So I do believe that having those conversations, and again, I understand the caution. I think part of what you're saying is, you know, we had 9/11, right? We had so much. So there's this heightened sense of being aware, right? Mm-hmm. Being conscious of things. And sometimes our prejudgments, our stereotypes of certain people, that could be playing into part. I'm not saying you. I'm just saying for some, that could be coming into play, right, for this young man versus, you know, he might have a genuine interest and want to know about Christianity for whatever reason.
And I agree with you totally. I'm just for the sake of argument, that
right.
One thing, when I was younger, I used to laugh and talk with everybody. I'd walk into a room and I didn't meet a stranger. But the wiser me doesn't do that. I mean, I now enter a room and I'm not interested in talking to everybody because, you know, you just learn better. It's just not even worth it. And so my point is that in conversating with people and exchanging ideas and viewpoints, sometimes you may start out, you know, trying to get someone to think like you. But again, if you're not careful, they'll have you thinking like them. And then my second fear is, will he go back and bring 10 of his friends? And then the next thing you know,
my thing is, the book I'm working on right now is called Not Yet Lost. It's a motivational book. The theme is finding motivation in an unmotivated world. Mm. But one of the things I just wrote, it says, in order to change someone else's opinion, you have to be willing to listen and maybe even change your own. And that's the truth of the matter. But see, what I'm saying is, the truth of the matter is, the truth will always be the matter.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Hey, you know what? Because we got one more story, I'm going to let them have it, y'all, but that's it. We only got, 9 minutes left in this segment. We got one more topic to hit. And, y'all, that's in congressional employees owe $8.6 million in back taxes. Congressional employees, $8.6 million. And I thought, I get all these notices talking about what I owe and when am I going to give them their money and can you call me, Ms. Hines, so we can talk? So don't get me wrong. Me and the IRS on good basis right now. But I'm just saying, there was a time that I thought, haven't y'all got somebody else y'all could be picking on? And you just wonder, now when I saw this story, I was thinking, I'm glad we're on good terms, because I probably would have called and said, listen, I just want y'all to know, what are y'all doing about this $8.6 million in back taxes that's owed to y'all by these congressional I'm sorry, wait a minute. Yeah, that is $8.6 million in back taxes. So that said, are they going after their own?
Well, I'm going to say my letter is, when you go after your own, then you come after me. So you send me verification that you're going after your own, because that's the double standards. There are double standards in this country, period. If you think about the teacher who was, just think about it. The teacher assaulted the six-year-old, allegedly, even though we see the video, assaulted the kid, right? And she get 10-day suspension. If the child were to assault her or somebody else in the school, they getting expelled and arrested. You know, if you look at, you know, all these different double standards, this is the same one. You know, Congress will not hold itself accountable. And I think, you know, the fox can't guard the hen house. So, and that is what this reminds me of, right? I am not shocked by it, just like these scandals that go on. So this should be expected, right? That's why they're looking for terms in Congress. That's why we're talking about transparency and, for public financing and putting limits and caps, right? Because up there on that hill, it's a job with the perkiest of the perk benefits. And the people lose by that kind of them not paying their taxes, right? They're not paying their fair share, right? We lose because then they want to tax us because they haven't held themselves accountable, misappropriated the pocketbook, and now the taxpayer has to fill in the gaps to balance the budget. So
using all kind of loopholes.
My take on it is, like, now we're in the era to where we have access to more information than ever before in the history of information. And a lot of things, you can hit any link, just like the link you sent, and it said that the girls weren't taking it all, they're not missing. And I was telling them, there's so much information out there that we can pick and choose what we want to talk about, missing the things that we need to be fighting for. And I think that's America's plan, is for us to be divided in our quest for this information, so we don't focus on the things that matter in our own community.
And, you know, I agree with that. I just think, you know, they said more than 700 congressional employees are delinquent on their taxes for a total of $8.6 million. And this is according to IRS statistics. And basically, giving Congress a tax delinquency rate above average for federal employees, that's Congress. You know, really? And so,
but
you know,
they're not voting on anything anyway, so what are they doing?
They're not doing what? That's just true.
Congress hasn't voted on anything in the last 2 years. They still, on this present election, they're still saying, we want to repeal Obamacare. We want to do all these other things. Something. Their whole plight right now is destroying what's been made instead of trying to make something else happen. So that's probably why the taxes aren't being paid, because they're not focusing on what they need to do. They're focusing on who did what they didn't want done.
Or they're doing it deliberately, right, to detract from the fact they haven't paid. If they do, they should do themselves like they do us. When they run our credit before we can get a job, you can't owe nobody. So then how about you run them, and since they owe, they don't pay, they got the same amount of days they give us, none, and then fire them. And I'm sure they'll find their money. So, you know, they need to hold themselves to the same standards they hold the everyday people. I'm that kind of person.
Say what, AJ?
I was just kind of nodding my head in agreement.
These next few facts kind of shocked me. It says tax delinquencies on Capitol Hill are four times more common than at the Treasury Department, which has come under scrutiny over bonuses paid to tax-delinquent IRS employees. Now, you mean to tell me if I owe Uncle Sam, he's going to take my tax return, but if I work for the IRS, I get a bonus, and that doesn't get taken from me, and I owe back taxes? That's not right.
Look, man who owed child support, you're right, it's not right, because if the man who owed child support, his IRS taxes get garnished. So if there were bonuses, that mean if his pay period got some bonuses attached, that's getting attached to. again, it's a double standard. But again, until the people, like AJ said, we are more, you know, we're in the technology age where we have access to information. The question is, what are we going to do with the information we now know? How are we going to leverage it for equity, right, for equality? How are we going to leverage that to get the needs of our communities met?
And that's true. See, truth, there's power. There's power in information. That's why they was getting their information, getting these reward cards at these stores. So we have all this information. Now we have all this new power that we don't know what to do with.
Right. Very good.
They also said that across the federal government, 318,462 federal employees owe a total of $3.3 billion, with a B, in back taxes. Billion
wow.
with a B. I mean,
and we
so,
can't owe a dollar.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just so glad we don't get to hers now, because I would be like, I'm like, Gwen, I'd be writing y'all a letter saying, listen. I'd be doing a show on this. I'm just saying. And basically they said 36 employees in the executive office of the president. Now let me repeat that. 36 employees in the executive office of the president are delinquent in their taxes for a rate of 2.6%. Anyway, so I'm
now
sure
think about, somebody going to use that to their advantage. There's going to be, remember that guy on the farm? Remember the guy with the cattle? I mean, he was talking crazy.
Bundy?
But, you know, yeah, you remember him crazy, how he was talking about protecting his land. You watch, someone's going to use that to their advantage, some argument in court, and see, we don't know how to leverage some of this stuff. We need to make this work to help ourselves so that, you know, giving some folk, you know, some reprieve, saying, you know, you clean house first, or you hold your house the same accountable to our house. If that was a movement of some sorts with the masses of the people, I'm sure, you know, there might be some leniency on us while they try to clean house. So, again, we should be able to use this to our advantage. The problem is, you know, what can you do? Other communities know how to do it. You know, whether I agree with the Tea Party folk, which I don't, you know, but some of them, they know how to organize and they know how to use their constitution to make it work for them, whether you agree with them or not. We need to make the Constitution work for us as regards to equity and, you know, equitable application of the law and due process.
Good luck. But, I mean, you know what the problem is.
Terry, do you remember the show we had? The show we had where the guy was saying that even having people pay taxes was never a constitutional thing, and it's illegal in the United States.
Yeah.
Say that again.
Okay. AJ gonna start somebody. Yep. They're going to be on his phone tonight.
You know,
no,
I'm thinking
I'm
about.
I'm just saying we had a show. We had a show where I'm repeating what somebody else said.
They said this
is not the opinion of Center Stage in any of his.
No.
If you see me on Channel 8 talking about, I'm not doing this because AJ said he is the quote.
No, the AJ quoted somebody else. You know,
oh,
get it right
okay.
now.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, y'all, we're going to get out of here. But listen, I promised myself when I heard this today that I was going to pass it on to the audience because it really bothered me. Y'all, listen, I have been under some serious scrutiny and some serious harassment from the Fort Worth Police Department for the last 3 years. Everybody that knows me knows that. And so because of that, I am an extra, extra cautious person. I really am. And they have harassed me in every way imaginable, and it's probably going to continue even today. You know, I got a call about my house in Fort Worth. Something was going on. So anyway, all that aside, I heard something today that really made me know that you really got to follow your gut. If you pay attention to your computer, if you have a laptop, they have these little cameras on there now, the little camera. And the other day I was showing a friend of mine some stuff on my computer, and I walked away for a second, and they hit the wrong button. And the next thing I know, I come back in front of my computer, and there I am on the screen, and I go, what did you push? And they go, I don't know, I pushed some button, and I was doing this, and anyway, the camera popped up. But I always knew that was there, and that's happened before. But my point is, when I first discovered that happened, I would always cover my computer, that little piece of that little camera with a piece of tape or whatever. Long story short, someone was talking about that today and were saying that they spy on you with that little camera on your computer. So to all of my audience, I'd like you to know, take a piece of tape, cover that up, because the last thing you want somebody to do, be watching you while you're walking around your house with your underwear on. So do like I always do, because I know they're on my phones. I know they try to pay attention to everything I do. So take a little piece of tape today and put it over that so that nothing you're doing can be monitored through that little camera. Anyway, just put it out there, y'all.
And that new Xbox system is the same way.
Hey, listen, y'all, everywhere.
In well, your cars. I put a tape, everything. Oh, my, you right about that, because I am convinced this thing is still running even when it's off. So
you
I'm
feel
about
me?
To put tape, towels, everything over the computer.
And listen, if you got a conversation you don't want nobody to hear, don't talk in your house. Listen, get up, go outside, get some fresh air. I'm just saying, they listening to everything.
Now, write it in Braille. Now, write it in Braille, because they could probably see the write it in Braille, because they could probably see the words on the paper from the satellites.
You and they can hear you with the new thing. You right. You can buy it at Walgreens, the new amplifier, so they can hear you down the block too. So just so you know.
I'm just putting that out there for y'all. Because, listen, I've been dealing with this for 3 years. And so I, listen, and I probably am not on up on all of it because, you know, they still follow me. They still know where I'm going to be when I'm going to be there. So that tells me that they have a few more things that I don't know about. But at the same time, as I learn, I try to pass it on. But that just really bothered me when I heard Alex Jones on Infowars.com today talk about that little camera up there and how they watch you and can watch what you're doing inside your house through your computer screen. So just be aware of that. Okay, listen, y'all, thank y'all so much for a great show. Christopher, please be safe. Hope you get to your destination safely. We're going to be praying for you that that happens. Hey, Dan Quinn, thank you all tonight for hanging out with me the whole hour, the whole 2 hours. I really enjoyed every topic. I think we hit the nail on the coffin on all of them, and I think and hope that, you know, we enlighten somebody, and hopefully you know a little bit more about Bosch executions and what's going to happen with your postal service and what's happening with the living wage and all of that. Listen, we got to get out of here. Join us each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Central, 9 to 11 Eastern, as we do what we do tonight, break down the news stories from across the world. Listen, good night, everyone. Had a great show. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Good night.